Welcome to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. Sarah, today's show is titled Inspiring Cooperation in Your Children. And during this show, one of my goals is to begin inspiring cooperation in you.
I'm feeling so inspired. Hi, I'm Sarah Polinchek. Yeah, keep inspiring me, John. I'm needing a little more.
Yeah, and okay. I'm so inspired I forgot to say that I'm John Summers Flanagan. And by the way, today's sponsor is the National Parenting Education Network, as well as the Engelhard Foundation. Thank you to both of our sponsors.
Mm-hmm. Okay, John, what is the big deal about cooperation? Shouldn't we just do free-range parenting? Kids need to learn independence, after all. So we should stop all this hovering and coddling.
Well, Sarah, as you know, parenting is a lot about balance. It's about parenting from the middle. Now, free-range parenting, and I sometimes have a little visceral reaction to that phrase. Mm-hmm. It just seems pretty silly. But it's partly a reaction to helicopter parenting, which you may be familiar with. In some ways, you know, the free-range parenting is absolutely fine because it fosters independence in children, and that's a good thing, right? But you had better complement your free-range parenting with some clearly communicated love and some clearly communicated limits, or you're going to have some problems, because free-range parenting should not mean no supervision parenting.
Just hands off, right?
Right. Shouldn't mean hands off, no supervision, no monitoring, no love, no limits.
On the flip side, I noticed you kind of looked at me when you said helicopter parenting.
I did. Only because you have said some things.
Is it wrong to stalk my children?
I think there are problems with extremes, Sarah. That's what I would say.
Ooh, I dream about having like little devices I could really just follow and record everything.
Yeah. I remember that one day when I said I saw one of your sons and you were just so like, where? When?
I was mad at you for not taking notes and getting a picture.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, the one thing, I mean, helicopter parenting and stalking, obviously that's over the top.
Right.
That can be suffocating.
Yes.
But the research on parental monitoring and supervision is really clear. It really basically says if you do too little monitoring and too little supervision, that kids are more likely to become engaged in delinquent behaviors.
Yes.
Yeah, that sort of makes common sense. But that's a pretty strongly supported research finding.
Yeah. Okay, I want to find the balance, so I'm on board here.
Okay.
So beyond our title,
okay,
for inspiring cooperation in our children, what is our plan for today?
Okay, two parts.
Mm-hmm.
Part one is we're going to talk about the types of situations that seem to trigger lack of cooperation or defiance and or reactions in our kids. We're going to try to talk about that first part of this show. We're going to talk about what kinds of kids are the most likely to react in negative ways and become uncooperative.
Mm-hmm.
And then part two, we're going to talk about how parents can inspire cooperation and maybe some specific techniques and general principles for having cooperative kids.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Oh, so I'm back to kind of finding the balance here, and I'm just thinking of some stories with my own kids. And I feel like so much of this changes depending on what age they're in, right?
Right.
You know, just last night, actually, I probably was a little helicoptery and really checking in about this extra credit science work that my son has or hasn't been doing. And he was really direct with me. And he said, when you ask me that every day, it makes me not want to do it.
It's an interesting phenomenon. I think of that as kind of polarization, right?
Mm-hmm.
The more preoccupied you are with the extra credit science assignment, the less preoccupied he is.
I know.
Right?
It's so hard.
It is hard.
I said to him, I'm like, what should I do?
please, son.
In that regard, I was kind of being funny because then I just kind of, you know, I just totally embrace the fact that he knows I'm really worried about his grades and I care about him. And so I'm just like, okay, you know, I'm going to be anxious. What should I do about this? And he said, just back off. Don't ask and it'll happen. I'll get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was able to say, you know, you're right. I trust you. You do. Mm-hmm. You do always get it done.
Yeah.
So it turned out okay. But that was a really clear communication from him.
Yeah.
I think it's real.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, give me a little space, Mom. Uh-huh. So that's a great example. And oftentimes there are three kinds of situations that are the most likely to produce defiance or a reaction to parenting. Mm-hmm. And one is when you ask your child to do something.
Yep.
Do that science extra credit, please, mm-hmm. right? Or if you ask your child to stop doing something, mm-hmm. like stop playing computer games, yeah. kids will have just a lot of trouble cooperating or even hearing you at that point.
Yeah.
And the third kind of situation is when you're trying to give your child some kind of, you know, as adults, we are so darn smart. Mm-hmm. We're trying to give our child some guidance, some advice.
Yeah.
And it might be a little critical. It might be because we think that we know more than they do. And sometimes that can evoke a little bit of resistance and defiance.
Yeah. And going back to just developmental stage, mm-hmm. you know, when our kids are younger, we can be a little bit more direct. So this first one you talked about, asking your child to do something. I mean, I used to be able to say, okay, time to turn off your game or the TV or whatever it was. And I could just be really direct about that.
Yeah.
And now that they're older, they're supposed to become more independent and make some of those choices on their own. So I'm more inclined to say things like, hey, so you've been on, you know, you're getting close to an hour here. You've been on. What are you thinking about? What's your end time? And that's just a mm-hmm. signal that we can have a little dialogue and they know that they have some choice in it and we mm-hmm. can talk about it a little bit, way more effective than if I just come and stand in front of them and say, turn it off. Not to say that I don't ever have to do that, but I try mm-hmm. to make that the last resort.
Right, right. Yeah. And you're treating them a lot more like, a little bit more like mm-hmm. an equal, because you're making that transition from being more of the authority figure with your younger children to, yeah, it's going to end pretty soon, Sarah.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're not going to be the boss of them.
Yeah, and the more I try, the worse it gets sometimes.
Well, let's just see if we can come up with, let's just brainstorm a few of the specific situations that are related to the kind of situational triggers that I mentioned. When we're asking kids to do something, when we're telling them to stop doing something, or when we're trying to give them some advice. What are mm-hmm. some things that come to mind?
Some more examples. So, I, you know, right now, just because of the developmental stage I'm in, mm-hmm. the dang phone is such a big deal.
Yeah.
You know?
Get off the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I really try not to say get off the phone, but I really try to say, first of all, I have to be really proactive mm-hmm. and let them know in advance, which is just another way of inviting cooperation, is that kids know the expectations in advance. Mm-hmm. So people don't like it when you just spring things on them.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I have something going on, I'll say, oh, by the way, today it's going to be really a low phone time day because we have all these other things. And I do. I have to let them know that morning or even the night before, because otherwise it's like, you're really messing with what I had planned.
Right.
And I think that's a respectful thing to let them know in advance, and it does invite more cooperation.
Absolutely. You know, mm-hmm. I like to say really kind of profound quotes from time to time, Sarah.
I'm excited. I'm on edge waiting for this one.
Yeah, you know, the only really good surprises are surprise gifts.
That's true when it comes to parenting. Because any time I've just said, right this moment, I need you to do X, Y, Z, it doesn't go well, especially mm-hmm. at this age. You know, I think I could get away with more of that when the kids were younger. But right now, no. We need advance notice.
I like to say it like, it's really good to have planned consequences that are natural and as logical as possible, mm-hmm. but to have spontaneous or surprise rewards, right? Surprise positive things. That is really powerful.
For sure. Yep. And when we're asking them to do things, mm-hmm. you know, like I'm needing you to do an extra chore, or I'm needing you to get your work done, or I'm needing you to, you know, come with the family to do something. I don't know. I find that it's so much better to use humor when that's appropriate. And again, I've said this before, but to have those expectations laid out in advance is so much more helpful.
Right.
I think we're barking up the same tree, aren't we here, John?
Right. And sometimes, you know, if they know the expectations, it really makes it easier. But also sometimes you don't know that. And sometimes you really have to have them respond. And sometimes you have to be direct. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like it's important for parents to be able to do that. And it might mean eye contact and say, hey, we really got to rush. We're going to be late. Mm-hmm. I really need your help. Mm-hmm. You know, do mm-hmm. me a favor here. Get the shoes on and let's get out the door.
And you just hit on something else, John, which is that when we let kids know that we need them, it's reminding them that we're part of a group here. I need you to participate. And kids feeling needed is a really big deal. They rise to the occasion often, as long as you don't overuse it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, chores are a particularly tricky thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the things that I learned way back when I was working at Families First is that if you're going to have your kids do chores, you got to kind of phase it in. You can't just say, okay, You know, Sarah, you're in charge of cleaning the bathroom. Because you don't know how to clean the bathroom.
That would be a gross bathroom.
But, you know, you don't really know how to clean the bathroom. And you know, and most 10-year-olds don't really know how to clean the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And so we do it and we show them how we want it. And then we do it together. And then you let them do it on a trial basis and you come in and inspect. Mm-hmm. And I think with all kinds of chores, having that sort of sequence helps kids master it. So at least you know they're capable of it.
Yeah.
And then you can go from there.
Right.
And I think that will inspire more cooperation, especially if you're working alongside them during that middle or that second step of let's do it together now. Mm-hmm. And it might be with some kids you have to go back there quite a bit. Or maybe you have to work in parallel and say, okay, I'm going to set a timer. We're both going to do chores for 24 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then there's always the when you, then you.
Mm-hmm. Grandma's rule.
Right. So, you know, there's so many incentives. There's so many things that kids want that you have to be thoughtful about. Gosh, okay, so when you have cleaned the bathroom or when you've even just wiped up the counter or when you've even just put your own stuff away, then you can XYZ, which these days is probably an electronic device.
Right.
Right?
Fortnite.
Fortnite. We're going to have a whole episode on Fortnite one of these days.
I know that that is a big issue in your household, and it's not in mine.
Okay.
It's really interesting.
And it's not just me.
No.
I have Fortnite shame.
I didn't mean to shame you. You know, I think another thing that happens is when we try to give our kids instructions, like after a sporting event, and we talked about that in our sports episode.
Sure.
But even at, you know, after a choir concert, I remember what my younger daughter, you know, she just didn't move her mouth very much when she sang.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And
kind of like a, what are those?
She was like Panama.
Yeah, Panama. Yeah.
It's like she had a little doll that she was, and that was really singing. And I remember like taking a video and trying to tell her, you should just sing out.
You gave her video feedback?
No, I didn't have her
good.
Show it. But I didn't show it to her because, but I remember watching it and thinking, she's just mumbling. She's not singing. Anyway.
So and, trying to teach your kids stuff.
Well, trying to teach them stuff because they're sensitive to criticism, right?
Yeah.
I mean, who isn't?
Totally. Yeah. So I think our parents out there can relate. Trying to teach our kids stuff is tricky.
Well, as soon as you try to teach me something, Sarah, you know, there's a message embedded in there. What do you think that message is?
It's that I'm not good enough. I don't know. You're the expert. I don't know anything.
Yeah. It's like, you know more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
All right. So asking kids to come on family activities, that can be another thing. I don't know. Sometimes the family activities are great, but sometimes they don't want to really spend a lot of time around you. So. That can be a challenge.
Yeah, I think a lot of times they don't lately.
So another thing is, you know, when you try to really teach your child about anything, right? Anything. Mm-hmm. Doesn't even matter what it is. Mm-hmm. Like we said, the message is negative. And so I'm wondering if anybody out there listening to us can relate to this. I would think so. But you can always... call in. 721. No, I'm sorry.
Oh, Joey, thank you for being there.
Those are some common triggering situations, Sarah. Mm-hmm. So what sorts of kids are the most reactive to parental control, maybe, and maybe the least cooperative, therefore?
Okay. Well, reactive. Well, first, let's not label kids.
I think that's important. You're right. We should not label kids in negative ways, but maybe there are some who are more sensitive. I think that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are some that are more independent. Right?
Right.
There's some who are more persistent. In other words, they won't stop doing what they want to do. There's some that like to focus, and they focus so much that the transition to the next thing is really, really hard.
Yeah.
I think we need to keep in mind those kinds of individual differences between children.
Well, yeah, I think what you're saying is that we need to know our kid.
Mm-hmm.
We need to really understand that even if we know our kid, that on any given day, they're going to have different moods. You know, if it was a really rough day at school, they're going to be a little bit more reactive. And I think a big part of our job, even though we're not going to always get it right, but that we're going to try to see kind of where they're at in the moment and adjust accordingly.
Okay. Yeah, that's very nice. I mean, adapting and adjusting to where our kids are,
mm-hmm.
being sensitive to who they are. All right. So let's offer some general guidance first and some more specific techniques in a few minutes.
Let's not.
Okay, let's not. What do you want to do next, Sarah?
specific techniques. Look how adaptable you are, John.
Yeah.
So cooperative.
Yeah. Okay, so what specific techniques do you like to use for inspiring cooperation, Sarah?
Okay. Well, I like to use a combination. So some would be more indirect and some would be more direct. So an indirect technique I like to use would be humor.
Okay.
You know, and obviously what I'm about to say for my example isn't truly funny, but my kids get it in that way. So my example is that they are not allowed to have any electronic device after school until they've definitely, at the very minimum, put their lunches away. You know, so they have to unpack their lunchbox, rinse out the little containers,
put
them in the dishwasher.
That is really funny.
I know, this is hilarious, right? So sometimes they'll forget. They just get distracted and forget. And so instead of getting mad and saying, go put your lunch away right now, you know, all those other things that I'm tempted to do because it's really irritating, is I'll just go, gosh, I know that you would have emptied your lunch, but somehow someone put food back into the little containers, put it back in your lunchbox, and that's still in your backpack. That's so weird.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'll just talk like that with a smile. And so then they know they're not in trouble and they know that I'm kind of giving them that little out, even though I shouldn't. Well, you know, I should put the hammer down.
Well, really, no. What you're doing is it's a reminder. And you're doing a kind of a joke reminder. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then they usually smile and they hop up and do it.
Yeah.
Usually. So, you know, so that's an indirect way that I'm using humor. And again, I realize that's not a truly humorous story, but it's just the way that I can connect with my kids and let them save face.
I invented an entity named Leroy who would do those pesky things. Now, I would just like to explain here just for a moment what just happened.
Yeah.
So now, well, like when someone like Sarah Polinchek, I'm talking to the listeners now, is explicitly uncooperative about something, then you can indirectly facilitate cooperation by giving that person some control, just like I did with Sarah. You noticed that she said she did not want to do general guidance. And I just managed to be really tricky.
Okay, I'm going to add that if you use subtle indirect strategy, you should resist the temptation to brag about it afterwards.
Yeah, that kind of spoils everything, doesn't it?
Okay. All right.
So bragging is just really not good unless you kind of ask someone, is it okay if I brag to you about some things?
And then it makes it fine.
Yeah, it doesn't make it perfectly fine.
Okay, so choices, John. Let's talk about choices.
Right.
So that's a specific indirect strategy. You offer two or more choices that you're okay with. Mm-hmm. So with younger kids, you know, I mean, do you want broccoli or ice cream for dinner? That's not an acceptable choice. But you might say for your vegetable tonight, do you want broccoli or carrots?
Mm-hmm.
So you're putting it out there. You're giving them a little agency in what they're going to do. And then they're not arguing, well, I don't want any vegetable. They're feeling like, well, I get to pick one or the other.
Right.
So that's an effective indirect strategy.
Yeah, yeah. And choices can be super elaborate, right?
Mm-hmm.
With kids who are a little more, I'm going to use the word defiant, or maybe they are a little more independent. That might be a kinder word to use.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going to have a whole menu of things, right? You're not just going to have carrots or broccoli, but you might say, hey, here's your menu. You pick. But I'm not talking about a menu just for food. I'm talking about a menu for a lot of different
things.
Just to be ready to give them a number of choices and so that they can be empowered to make choices, but they all have to be acceptable to you as the parent.
Yeah. So another one is, do you want your screen time now or do you want it after dinner? You know?
It's a reasonable choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So here's the general guideline. Know your kid, right?
Yep.
Know their developmental stage. Some kids are hypersensitive to criticism. They can kind of see it. They feel it. They know it's coming. They expect it. And this partly will come, and I think we need to look at ourselves as parents. If we tend to be too critical, sometimes they are just anticipating that the next thing we say is going to be a critical analysis of whatever it is that they did. We need to look at ourselves and say, are we being too bossy? Maybe that's why our kid wants to be so independent. We need to look at ourselves. Are we helicoptering too much? Maybe that's why they're fighting for independence. Or are we being too hypercritical and noticing only the negative things? Do we need to intentionally start to say those positive things?
Oh, I'm just being reminded of the ratio. Do you remember the ratio, John?
5 to 1.
Yep. So just as a reminder to our listeners that, we want to be sure that we're saying 5 positive things for every 1 negative. And so when we're redirecting and using that 1 negative, it's going to have a lot more power to it than if we're... our ratio was the other way around.
Now, so Sarah, what do you do if you have a kid who's oversensitive and hypersensitive to criticism?
Yeah, I just have a quick little example, not that my children are oversensitive, but no. I do think being a little sensitive is a hallmark of adolescence a mm-hmm. little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things my kids will do is I'll say, oh, you need to turn your phone over. And they'll say, I just did, as they're turning it over, you know, as though that millisecond, I don't know. And it's something that's just really irritating to them.
Yeah. So I think one thing that is helpful with those kids that anticipate criticism is that they're ready probably to criticize themselves. But so instead of doing that, if you can say, hey, I was watching you play basketball,
mm-hmm.
and I saw you do this one thing really well.
Yeah.
And then to say, well, what do you think? And so it's sort of a variation on that old sandwich technique where you say something positive, then you give a criticism, and then you say something positive.
Yeah.
But instead of you being the one who says some criticism, just let them do a self-evaluation in the middle. And yeah. then afterwards, maybe they've already criticized themselves. Maybe they didn't, but you gave them a choice. They could if they wanted to. And then you say something positive about the basketball performance. So does that make sense?
Yeah, I thought you were going for the sandwich technique. I like that technique. You know, another example there, again, I know I'm talking a lot about electronic devices. You can tell the world that I'm living in right now, mm-hmm. right?
But and a lot of parents, I think.
Yeah, it's a tough one. So something like, gosh, you know, over this last break, you were really good about staying active and really keeping busy. What do you think about your screen use? Mm-hmm. How's that going? And, you know, so I'm starting out with just I noticed this really positive thing that's true. It has to be real and true for them because they'll smell that you're being manipulative if mm-hmm. it's not really authentic and true.
Yeah. Ask them to do a little self-evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's another general guideline. Don't get too ideological. Mm-hmm. And you know what I mean by that? You know, I think I said already, helicopter parenting is suffocating. Free-range parenting runs the risk of raising delinquent children. I mean, you want to assure their safety. You want to advocate freedom for them to be age and developmentally independent. Over-control of kids, even if you're smiling when you're over-controlling, mm-hmm. it can really breed resistance. Over-permissiveness, even if you have a good rationale for it, can just have a range of negative outcomes.
Yeah. It's kind of sounding political. Kind of like totalitarianism versus anarchy. You really don't want either extreme.
Right.
Yeah.
When government overgoverns, you get resistance, right? Protests, mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. When government undergoverns, you just kind of get a mess. and really, when it comes to parenting, if you undergovern, right, the mess will actually, in the long run, be inside of the kid. The kid will be kind of an emotional mess. Self-esteem tends to suffer. They don't really have a good outside sense of how they're doing, and they need some parenting for that.
Yeah, to help develop that internal regulation. So let me summarize. Mm-hmm. To inspire cooperation, we should do some of these following things that I'm about to say. So be aware of situations that trigger negative reactions. Be aware of our child's unique style and individual needs, which can change hour by hour, minute by minute. Avoid ideological parenting extremes and use specific techniques that build independent thinking, but does so within limits or boundaries, just like the example of giving choices.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great summary. Thank you, mm-hmm. Sarah. I'm going to move us on now.
Okay.
There is a technique I want to talk about called solution-focused questioning.
Okay.
Do you know what it is?
I think so.
I'll just share it then. Solution-focused questioning is when you start to ask questions about your children's successes. Things like, how did you manage to get that puzzle together? Or you got to be on that test that you were dreading. What did you do to help yourself be successful? Or we've been talking about how much you hate your science teacher, but at your parent-teacher conference, he said you're doing pretty well in class. Tell me how you're doing that. So these are all questions that pull your child toward explaining his, her, their successful behaviors. Does
okay.
that make sense?
Yeah, I think it does. How did you think of all these good parenting ideas, John?
I wish I could say that I was a natural. I didn't feel like a natural parent. It was a struggle for me. I think sometimes even as a grandparent, it sometimes is a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did a bunch of reading, and I did some work, and I tried to do some work on myself, and I still get a lot of things wrong.
Okay. Yeah. I hear that. Before we move on, though, I want to talk and comment for a second about what just happened. When I asked you how you came up with all these great parenting ideas, I was inviting some reflection on your part, and you kind of talked a little bit about some of the negative stuff. What happened there?
You know, I think it's natural. It's like when I hear a positive feedback, it not only helps me to look at what I'm doing right, but it also helps me feel safe to talk about what I'm doing wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just an important thing for parents to remember. The solution-focused questions, where we're asking about how they managed to do something well, may actually produce a little self-reflection, and they might admit to some things that they're not doing well. And it's part of that balance and that dance that I think that happens between parents and kids.
Mm-hmm. And gosh, you know, raising kids who can self-evaluate and reflect on their own abilities, man, that is going to be a lifelong skill that's going to be very useful, right?
Yeah.
And having the kind of relationship with our kids where we're inviting that kind of reflection really increases the cooperation we're going to get,
yeah.
especially when things get really hard, you know?
Yeah. And I think so. We're looking to the future and,
yeah.
and about the kind of kids that we want to raise
yep.
or adults that we want to raise.
Mm-hmm.
So now time for the money tips.
Yep.
What's yours?
Okay. Mine is just really read the room, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by that is really understand what stage of development our kids are in. We're going to certainly parent a lot different with kids who are younger than we are with kids who are in the teenage years.
Mm-hmm.
And really understand that. Know the individual nature of each of our kids. I have two kids that couldn't be more different. Oh my gosh. And it has taught me so much. And the way I parent my older one is so different than the way I parent my younger one. And specifically to one of them, I'm not going to name names,
mm-hmm.
things change more quickly, you know?
Yeah.
One day he might be really amenable to hearing some amazing thoughts I have about how he's doing, and another day he is not. And I
yeah.
need to anticipate that. And I've learned that. I'm not always right, but I think the fact that I'm trying to get it right is what matters.
Yeah, yeah, cool. That kind of relates to my money tip, which is, two things we didn't talk about much today, but one is related to what you just said, and that is your kids' mood.
Mm-hmm.
When kids are in good moods, they're much more able to be cooperative. It's sort of like us as adults, too. We're in bad moods. It's hard to really cooperate and go along. It's easy to want to sabotage or resist.
Yeah.
So mood and monitoring that and trying mm-hmm. to increase a positive mood is important. And the second one is, really the foundation for all this is a good, respectful, loving relationship. That's really what inspires cooperation better than anything else.
Yep.
Resources.
Okay, yeah. What resource do I have? I am going to tell you.
Okay. That's what you're supposed to do.
I'm going to announce everything I say before I say it.
Okay.
Meg Ekibis, she has a book called 52 Weeks of Parenting Wisdom, Effective Strategies for Raising Happy, Responsible Kids. And you can find that for purchase on Amazon. You can also find it on John's website where he talks about mutual problem solving.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool. And then I'm going to recommend, and I didn't think I was going to, but mm-hmm. I've decided to recommend the book titled Free Range Kids.
Interesting.
Giving our children the freedom we had without going nuts with worry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some really good stuff in there. I don't like the idea. I don't like the concept of free-range kids, but
mm-hmm.
she is responding or reacting to some observations in American culture. And I think they're good observations. And so it's a useful book in that sense. Her name is Lenore Skenazy, S-K-E-N-A-Z-Y.
Great.
Free-range okay. kids.
So she probably would not like my fantasy of having my kids.
She would be
chipped.
Against that. She would be against that. And so I think it's really good to have a balance or an array of different kinds of knowledge that we use to parent our kids. And so mm-hmm. I would not say just read Free Range Kids.
Right.
Read other things like Meg Ekibis's book as a complement to that.
Or they could just listen to us.
Over and over.
All right. Thank you, John.
All right. And I guess we'd like to end by thanking everybody for listening and hope that you enjoyed the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast.
The Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast is sponsored in part by the Charles Englehart Foundation, audio engineer Mike Matthews, production assistant Joey Moore, and co-hosts Sarah Polinchek and John Summers Flanagan.